Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week,
presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lagerman, and Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank.
Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, rolling along through the last couple of weeks before things get started. Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna Live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. I'm Brian Sexton. My broadcast partner, Jeff Lagerman. I should say the Jeff Lagerman.
The
Jeff Lagerman. I was reading somewhere that someone was complimenting you
on
about your film breakdown and how excited they were to see the film breakdowns, and the was capitalized, and it was the film breakdown from the Jeff Lagerman. So you are kind of like Ohio State. Jeff Lagerman.
Good. Well, anytime you get a "the" in front of your name, I think you're doing all right.
And if you capitalize it, it gives more importance to it as well.
Just capitalize the first name and get the last name spelled right. That's all I ask.
And on radio, we don't have to spell it right. We just have to say it right. And
there's no R in Lagerman.
I was just about to say. We've got that one. John Osher, the senior writer of Jaguars.com, is here. How about a gratuitous plug for what we were working on earlier today?
Yeah.
I was going to say, first of all, I'm surprised I found the place. It's been about 3 or 4 weeks since I've been here. So
has it been that long? We thought you were just out running.
I'm glad you missed
me. Really, really late.
I'm glad you missed me. We shot today four of the videos for the Jaguars top 25 all-time players that we're shooting, and it was something we decided to do as a summer series, and I'm excited about it. The roundtables that we had with me and Jeff and Dan Hicken and Vito Stellino today, really interesting stuff. A good rapport between the people involved, and it was interesting to hear some different perspectives, different stories, and I think people will have fun reading it.
Originally, when you came up with the idea, John's thought was to do a top 50.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And doing a top 50, I mean, this is a young franchise.
17 years, right.
You know, relatively young.
There were some names on there that were...
Yeah, so when you get all...
I got votes, put it that way. That's how bad.
Yeah, when you go all the way to 50, I mean, you're like, okay, let me just put in four names here.
Right.
You know, so it's very difficult to do 50, but I think the 25, it's perfect for this franchise. You go beyond that, then you're kind of reaching.
Yeah, because if it went beyond that, we're into...
Well, we get me in there.
I had you 26, solid 20. And they cut that 26. Sucker at 25. And
I had Jeff Lagerman at 50.
Right. Which might have cost you a spot in the top 25.
Now, here, okay. now, what would Bocelli have voted himself?
One.
is there anything higher than one? I mean, is there something honorary he can
have
give
we heard? Did he have his hip taken care of? Is he at least moving again?
I had heard. I'd heard today, not yet, but that's. I may have heard it from you. I mean, I didn't hear it from him certainly.
All right, so we got 50 minutes.
He's
fellas.
A young man to have.
Yeah.
Two hips.
Yeah.
You know, but hey, you know, so. It, you know what, for I know that in a few, when we get this thing up on the website, Jaguars.com, we are going to have, I think, some kind of fan interaction with that to where the fans can go ahead and do their top 25 as well. I think that would be good.
Yeah.
You know, because...
The enthusiasm in your voice is overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that... The whole thing, we're still putting it together. But I'm sure we'll do something like that.
I think that to go along with that, this is just, I'm thinking out loud here. I haven't said this to John or anybody.
We got 50 minutes to go.
I think it would be good for all of the people that had a say in this, a vote in this, mm-hmm. which was, you know, me, Brian, you, Vito, Dan Hicken, who else?
Pete Prisco.
Right, we've had thoughts of having everybody put their top five up.
Okay.
You know, and
I think they put them all everybody's top 25 up.
Yep.
You know, because, I mean, to me, that's kind of interesting, you know, to see how everybody voted. Because when we were doing some of the shoots for this today, the first thing, I did one with Vito and did one mm-hmm. with you. And the first thing I wanted to know was, where'd you have this guy?
Right.
I wanted to see where you had a guy compared to where I had a guy so we could kind of debate
mm-hmm.
where the merit was in putting him where he ended up.
All right, well, without giving anything away, the segment that you did with Vito
mm-hmm. –
you guys were real similar, except for one player who was down the list a little bit. But other than that, I mean, you nailed it. And we did a segment with Dan Hicken where, I mean, a player may have been up a notch or down a notch, but, I mean, you had him, nailed it.
Yeah, generally speaking, I think most fans out there probably
top five's easy.
Have an idea of you know, what the top five looks like. And then I thought what was interesting was how deep it went, that even the 11 through 15 guys, you know, you can say that this franchise hasn't had a whole lot of franchise-level players, but when you start really looking at it, they've had some good players in 17 years.
Really good players.
I mean, some very good players. And I was impressed because I missed 8 or 9 years, not covering the team. I was impressed to go back and sort of see some of the guys that I had seen twice a year while I was covering the Colts, to see what different guys really thought of those players. And it was interesting to see where some of them ranked. I probably didn't have quite the appreciation for maybe a John Henderson having been away that somebody who had seen him did. And it was interesting for me to learn that.
It was fun to do. But I'm going to be honest with you, John. I mean, doing the top 50,
it was tough.
I think I spent 3.5 hours with it. Really, honestly.
That much
yeah.
time?
Yeah. You know, 3.5 hours to where, you know, I went back and looked at, you know, the bios of all the Jaguar players, because for me...
What was your criteria?
Well, I didn't really have anything that was like a set rules, right. but the one thing that I did notice, like when we did a segment with Vito and Brian, you brought that up about how, you know, we were all pretty much in the same ballpark. I differed with some people in ranking a Jaguars player among the great Jaguars, because I put a little bit more of a premium on the number of years a player was able to do it for the Jaguars and at what level for those number of years.
Okay.
You know, for example, Leon Searcy obviously is going to be in the top 25 at some point for the Jaguars right. in this top 25 list we're doing. But if you look at Leon, he had a very short time span with the Jaguars.
4 years.
Had, you know, some good years with the – really good years with the Steelers. Was with the Jaguars the best right tackle in football, but – It was a short period of time that he played with the Jaguars. Now, if you were going to rank him and say, okay, you count his years with the Pittsburgh Steelers kind of in this evaluation, you might change that. You know, John Henderson, phenomenal player, but he had 1 year that was just outstanding. And then he had some other years, wasn't very good. You know, that was kind of becoming right. a locker room problem.
I ranked Leon probably higher than maybe somebody else would, because I covered every one of his years, so my memory of him was as a, you know, from the perspective of how long I covered the team, he was a dominant player for 4 of those 6 years, so my thought on him was very strong. Had I covered it 17 years, I might have had somewhat of a different feel for where he ranked. So certainly the 8 people involved had different perspectives and had been around it differently. You played for a while, then you were broadcasting for a while. You know, so it was, I think all of us had different avenues that we were coming at this from, which I think makes it good.
Now, we did the top 50, you know, and you kind of threw out, here's a list of guys you might want to consider for the list. And I went back and looked at, you know, Jaguars from forever. You know, everybody donned a uniform.
You thought Farrah Collins deserved a vote somewhere?
No, but I thought Brant Boyer deserved to be in the top 50.
Yes, that's a good one.
Yeah, and you didn't have him on the list originally, and I put him on my list because I thought that, you know, he's probably the second greatest Jaguar specials teams player in its history. I had Joe Zelenka on that list. I mean, a mainstay for the Jaguars for many years as a long snapper and short snapper. You know, but that's what you get when you go to 50 for a young franchise. I mean, you're going to a long snapper, for God's sakes, and you got 2 kickers that had mentioned in the list that you sent.
And you had 2 Pro Bowl punters here, too, now. I mean, Brian Barker went to the Pro Bowl in 97, and Chris Hansen went in 2002.
Prior to the axe.
Yeah, 2002. Yeah, right.
Prior to
that's why. It didn't take long. What year did he hurt it? Oh, 03. Okay, 02. Yeah, he went in 02. So,
but it was fun to do because, you know, what it did is it brought me back down memory lane of, you know, of looking at the all-time roster of, you know, Gordon Laro. And I'm thinking,
number 49.
Gordon Laro, yeah, I remember Gordon.
I do too.
Boston College.
Ryan Christopherson, Rhino, yeah, I remember Rhino.
You know a little tidbit about Rhino, he was drafted ahead of Terrell Davis.
Mm-hmm. Though there's a lot of people drafted ahead of Terrell Davis.
Yeah.
But it was good. I mean, it's, you know, folks, if you're, you know, a hardcore Jaguars fan at some point, and I don't know if it's available.
When are you posting it?
On Jaguars.com, but, you know, it's interesting to go.
It'll be in the few days leading up to training camp to give people an idea when it's going to run.
But it's fun to go back and just to look at the Jaguars' all-time roster and see if names really, really hit you.
Ashley Shepard?
Don't remember him.
Linebacker in 95, 3 games.
How about the first 27? Vinny Clark.
Vinny Clark. Yeah, Vinny Clark. Loved Vinny.
Rod Smalley.
Rod Smalley. That was a Larry Pasquale draft pick, special teams player. Oh, yeah, he's going to be a core special teams player.
Spent training camp on the bike. And
wasn't core anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was fun.
It was fun.
You know, Willie Jackson, you know, going back to seeing the name of Willie Jackson and Reggie Barlow. Obviously saw Reggie at Jaguars OTAs, but it was fun. Corey Mayfield, you know, who I actually shared the first sack in franchise history
with.
Right.
That's right.
And he took a plane home from Denver in the preseason.
In 96, because of the addition of Clyde Simmons. I mean, it brought back a lot of memories just looking at the names of moments like you just talked about.
I flew into the airport that morning because I stayed the night before to do the Tom Coughlin show. I get off my plane, and the plane's going to turn around and go back to Jacksonville, and there's Corey Mayfield getting on. I'm thinking, is he hurt? What's going on here?
Yeah, that was rough.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, get to the hotel, because he wasn't talking. Go to the hotel and find out they'll sign Clyde Simmons. That's where Corey Mayfield's going. Mm-hmm. A lot of memories come flowing back.
Sure,
back.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's
we good. Could talk for hours sure. about that.
Who was the guy from JU? I'm blanking on his name.
Micah Ross.
I saw receiver. He was on a bullet side of a kickoff or a punt. He had two guys on him, and I never remember this. I'm in the booth looking down. He hit both of them, knocked them right on their butts.
He's now a basketball coach at Atlanta Coast High.
Yeah. Good and guy. By the way, Brent Boyer is coaching with the Colts.
Yeah, yes. He got on.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. He actually had an interview last year with Tom Coughlin, which is funny.
Tom Ozen, right. Cut him to somebody.
Because
times.
Brent Boyer complained more about Tom Coughlin than maybe any player in Jaguars history. But yet he was interviewing last year with Tom Coughlin, and he was very disappointed that he didn't get the job.
Right.
He really wanted to work for Tom, but like most players, you know, when they played for Tom, they didn't really kind of, I guess you could say, respect Tom Coughlin. But when they leave
game, they want to be with him.
They gain more respect for him because they kind of, you know, they mature.
They realize that you get with him as a coach, you got to know what you're doing.
Absolutely. But it was fun.
Cool. More to come. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville on a very steamy night in July. Camp a few weeks away. Take a break and return. Joe, you got something? Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it. All right. Oh, was I on the air there? We have a policy here. People who come in, unless they allow us to mention their name, they're ghosts. Welcome back. Jaguars This Week, Brian Sexton.
And they really should bring food.
Have we got that set up for this year?
Not
Wednesday
yet.
Nights with food?
That'd be
we'll
nice,
get that taken care of.
See what we can do.
I just thought Loggy was going to kill something and bring it in every week.
I can do that.
Ask and ye shall receive.
That was delicious.
What was
those venison steaks?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the venison sausages. You liked them, didn't you?
No, the steaks.
The steaks. Yeah. Oh, yeah,
you
the fry.
The deep
yeah,
fryer
yeah,
in?
A cute
hey,
steak.
The Philly's coming out now. He wants you to thin slice it so he can make a Philly cheesesteak with it.
Yeah, we could try that.
We'll
try
it. All right, folks, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351 for our show this evening. John Osher, Jeff Loggam, and Joe Fortunato.
We were just talking to one of the – Bill Prescott, Jaguars boss man. That's who it
sure.
was. No secret. And we were just talking about the Jaguars locker room project, which has been – you know, it's been written about, it's been talked about, and it's well on its way. And
you were there today?
Yeah, I got a chance to take a sneak peek in there today, and it is gorgeous. It is very nice. It looks very big. It looks open. It looks twice as big as what it did before. And, man, I wish I had that locker room.
Well, somebody asked me today, I got a question in the Ozone. Thank you. About, you know, does it really matter? And, you know, I answered, of course it does, because, you know, everybody who goes somewhere, you know, you want to go to the coolest place. But as a guy who's gone free, you know, through free agency, how important is something like that?
It's just nice. You know, is it a game changer? No. You know, but it's certainly it makes an impression. And I think that you've got to have things like that to make an impression. When you bring a free agent in here and he sees the locker room and sees the amenities that a player can have at his own locker, you know, for example, you know, the chairs are custom-made chairs. I'm talking about the chairs for the lockers.
Right.
You know, they're wider than normal chairs. Like, you know, our behinds, you know, we can sit in a normal chair that we can go by, you know, like, for example, right. probably sitting in a chair from, you know, some Office Depot
right.
type of place.
Well, there's a chair from the locker room from 1995. It's just a normal-sized chair.
Yeah, and all that is a folding metal chair. Well, the ones that are going to be in the locker room in going forward, and I think from talking to somebody who's supposed to arrive, I think, next week. I mean, these are custom-made. They're 20-something inches wide to accommodate the, you know, the wide bodies.
Terrence Knighton can sit there.
Terrence Knighton can sit in it very comfortably and made of leather, and, you know, they're really nice. I mean, but, you know, in fact, talked to Patrick Cavanaugh and going to be looking at doing a locker room tour at some point for Jaguars.com to let everybody kind of see what's happened. Because it is, it's going to be gorgeous. And it's not, they're not done yet. You know, they're going to be doing another phase, I guess, of it next year. But what I saw in there today, I got to sneak in there, and I probably wasn't allowed in there. But
did you have a hard hat on?
I snuck in there. I got a hard hat.
Okay.
And
I think that OSHA works with that.
And
OSHA, not OSHA.
I had a hard hat on for my hard hat.
Okay.
Just to make sure all the OSHA people listening out there are cool. But it looks really good. I'm looking forward to seeing that done. And right now they've been temporarily across the hall, and I guess that would be considered the Jaguars' visiting opponent locker room or something.
It's the south locker room. The cheerleaders use it on game day.
Yeah. So, but it's going to be nice. It's going to be real nice, and you know they got a little bit of ways to go, but not much more.
Yeah.
And then next year's, I believe, has to do with the weight room, and there's a lot of facility stuff. By the time the whole project's over with, it's going to be the area where the players live. And for fans who don't understand it, there's locker room, training room,
weight room,
where the players really live on a daily basis when they're here, is going to be, as I would say, as good as there is in the NFL.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be top-notch. And next year, when they finish kind of the other half, which is the training room, the weight room, and I think they're going to be moving the coach's locker room, which kind of sits between the player's locker room and the training room and weight room.
And there's some sort of upstairs involved. I mean, there's a second level
for the weight room
of some capacity involved. So it's going to be fascinating to watch how they put that into an already existing facility.
It's going to be nice. I know one thing. Shock Combleys and doing it first class, and what I saw today, that's first class.
Well, and when you look around the National Football League, look at what the Steelers have. I don't know what the Colts have. It may compare. Yeah, well, you when in Seattle, when we went out there a couple years ago, didn't you go tour?
I did get to take a tour, and that place is impressive.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, you do have to compete on a facility basis because people want to know that they're going to go someplace that makes them feel good.
Yeah, this locker room and this setup will be substantially nicer than Indianapolis's day-to-day facility. The Lucas Oil Stadium, where they are on game days, is first rate. But this will be substantially nicer than the Colts' day-to-day operation.
I like the idea of having everything right there at the stadium.
Yeah.
And I think it's unique, mm-hmm. You know, and you don't have to have some separate complex. I mean, I like that idea. But the best one that I've ever seen Atlanta Falcons for years, I mean, they blew everybody out of the water.
The one at Flowery Branch.
The one that they did at Flowery Branch.
It's still very good.
And it's still one of the tops in the National Football League because the Falcons have a training complex that's multi-storied, but then it looks out upon three grass practice fields. And then behind the practice fields is a complete apartment complex, which houses the players and the coaches during their training camp if they need to.
Right.
And then off to the left is a complete indoor facility, which their arena football team, I believe, that's where they practiced at. I mean, their facility was like a campus. Seattle's is just breathtaking because, obviously, the technology of their owner,
Paul Allen,
is Mr. Microsoft along with Bill Gates. It sits on a lake. And literally, Mr. Gates can fly in with his seaplane, landed on the lake, and fly in on a seaplane, landed on the lake, and pull up to the dock of the Seahawks complex and tie the plane up and walk off and watch practice.
Local flavor.
I mean, it's, you know, with the, you know, in That's Seattle cool. at the lakes there, you know, you've
cool.
got
Can you not do that? I mean, I see.
Here?
Yeah.
Just a long walk from the seaplane. He could pull up over there at Metro Park, but it's a long walk across the asphalt.
Yeah, not quite true. The same.
But Seattle.
That's why there's helicopters.
And the technology that's built into the Seattle Seahawks facility is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everything. Anything a player could want technology-wise, they have it. It's Great. Impressive.
All right. We've got another half hour. We'll figure out what we're going to talk about. Any ideas?
We'll call it
something. Right. Maybe Joe will have
Football.
An idea.
Man, you guys are tough tonight. Tell it's July early. This portion of Jaguars This Week brought to you by Football Fanatics, more exciting Jaguars This Week, right after news on WOKV on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to Jaguars This Week. 23 minutes left in our program this evening, and if you've got a thought you'd like to share, fire away. Joe, when do we get kicking with the Mike Mularkey show and the two-hour Jaguars This Week? Give folks a sense of when in-season program begins.
All right, a little change, too. Mike Mularkey show. The coach wants to do his show on Mondays. We've been used to a Tuesday coach's show.
And Thursday before him.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Tom did him on Thursday. Thanksgiving.
Whew. We always taped it at 5 a.m.
Yeah. Mike Mularkey show begins July 23rd. The Jaguars report.
So that's a week from Monday.
Camp, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yes.
good.
Yes, it's not too long from now.
A week from Monday.
Well, he's back at work. You know, he'll be back at work, and it kind of that'll be an interesting show, just because you kind of, I'm sure he'll give everybody an idea of how camp he expects camp to flow and his expectations, and you know, and hopefully have an update on Maurice Jones-Drew at that point.
Yeah, a good update. So that starts the 23rd. Jaguars report, by the way, will also start Monday the 23rd. You could hear that on WOKV in the morning.
At what? Like 4 a.m.?
No, it's probably like 6:10 or something like that.
Okay.
I'll get that. 6:48.
Wow. Almost prime time.
How about that?
There you go.
Okay, Jaguars reporters. We got Johnny O and Cole Pepper. Tuesday nights.
Tuesday nights with Cole and Johnny O.
Starts August 7th.
A lot of knowledge on that show.
That's right before our first game with against the Giants right here.
Yep, that's right.
At Everbank. And the Jaguars This Week goes to 2 hours August 8th.
So there you have it, an updated schedule. And
okay.
We are
that's good.
Really working to fill time here.
No, that's good. No struggle filling time. You
no,
know,
was, no.
You know,
too
it's interesting that this time of year, you know, it's, I guess you could say, it is the dead zone.
It is.
And I don't know about you guys, but my email, text messages, phone box has been blowing up by every NFL broadcast that exists around the country. Okay. Texans radio, Colts, mm-hmm. you know, radio.
They're all looking for someone to give them a little
Absolutely.
Insight.
You know, Solomon Wilcox and Pat Kerwin did them on NFL radio, Sirius NFL radio. You know, everybody's looking to kind of get that preview from around the league with different teams. And we talked a lot, Pat Kerwin and Solomon Wilcox and I, about, you know, the Jaguars' new situation. It's amazing how under the radar this team is, yeah. and how little clue that people in other markets
off
have
yeah.
about this football team. I mean, they really have got no idea. You know, they don't know all the changes. And if you asked a lot of people in the business, you know, what do you think about the Jaguars' free agent signings? And they'll go, who'd they get?
Yeah.
You know, that, but that's good.
An unbelievable number of national types rank this team number 32. I mean,
yeah.
you see mock drafts and people put them at choosing number one. And if you look at the roster top to bottom, teams that have disastrous seasons like that have glaring holes in places. They're inordinately weak at certain spots. If you look at this roster, this depth chart, you know, it's just not a weak roster top to bottom. It's just, I mean, I don't see how you can interpret it that way.
A lot of people put a lot of stock into what the national, quote unquote, national writers or national broadcasters do and say. And folks, they don't always do their homework.
All you need to know about that, Jeff, and you played so you get it. How many years, every year that I've ever covered it, you're sitting there in the fourth week of September or the fourth week of the season, and on NFL primetime they're talking about, boy, what a topsy-turvy season this is.
It's because their expectations
were
different.
Right. It's because the national expectation is always based on what happened last year, and this is a sport where it's not about one or two star players in this sport outside the quarterback. It's about having a deep, organized team. And that's why you see so many surprises. It can change quickly, and I think this team's going to surprise a lot of people, especially the ones who think it's in the bottom eighth of the league.
And perfect example, Paul Kuharsky.
Yeah.
Who I think does a pretty good job.
The blogger from ESPN.com.
He's the blogger for ESPN. I happened to read an article that he wrote about the Jaguars, and he talks about depth and at the different positions. And linebacker, he actually almost said that it was a deep group, but then he brought up the injuries that Clint Session had had last year with the head, and so he said, well, you know, I really can't call them deep, but good. And then he went to tackle, and I'm talking offensive linemen, and he says, very thin. What? Did you not have a chance to watch Cameron Bradfield play last year at a moment's notice and play very well? Guy Wimper played admirably last year and was hurt for most of the year with a leg injury and just kind of gutted it out, knowing that there wasn't really an option behind him. To me, I consider that a very deep position for the Jaguars.
And he calls it their thinnest.
If you put Guy and Cameron as your backups, if Evan can stay healthy, it's a pretty deep group.
That's a very deep group.
If he doesn't, then you wonder if those two guys behind him are full-time starters or not.
Well, do you have any sense?
That's what depth is. Depth is being able to throw in a guy.
Do you have any sense where Britton is as camp starts?
He looked 100% healthy and back to the old Evan Britton to me and all the OTAs and mini camps.
He looked as good as you can look in an off season.
Yes. And for an offensive lineman and no pads.
Okay.
He couldn't have looked any better.
Agile, I expect, was able to do things without, you know, a thing Jeff and I talked about one day on the field was when you watched him, there was no favoring. It wasn't like he was out there, and when he would move, he was thinking about, okay, I'm going to move in a certain way so as not to bother the back. It was natural, instinctive movement that you have when you're not thinking about being hurt. I'm kind of paraphrasing you, Jeff, but that's kind of what we saw that day.
He was getting after it.
Better way of saying it.
Yeah. Almost to the point where you're like, Evan, there are rules to
tell you you're not supposed
to have a lot of contact and be so aggressive.
All right. So what's the upside for Cameron Bradfield?
To me, from year one to year two.
Grand Valley State, undrafted free agent rookie. From Grand Valley State.
And what was the game that he had to
Steelers.
Pittsburgh. Because Evan woke up. And that wasn't a game.
It was Eugene.
Eugene Monroe had a neck that all of a sudden, he's a scratch.
Right.
Not a scratch. He dressed.
Well, that's the day Evan woke up, too. I forget the exact details of it, but Evan woke up with a back and was long-term. Turned out he was done for the year. But Eugene was – I think Eugene was out.
He had a neck.
They had to move Guy and insert Cameron.
They put Guy in at right tackle.
Right, that's what it was.
And they put Cameron Bradfield at left tackle, and then they dressed Eugene, knowing that they really didn't even want to have him dressed, but he was like an break glass in case of emergency only. On the road at Pittsburgh against one of the hardest defenses in the world to try to figure out for an offensive lineman. With a rookie quarterback, and your rookie left tackle, undrafted free agent rookie, did a fantastic job. To me, that's got to count for something.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the guy has looked very good. I'm not saying he's going to be a future starter or anything like that, but maybe. I mean, he showed some of that in that Pittsburgh game.
He looks the part.
In that game there, he proved he belongs. And for an undrafted free agent rookie from a small school, can't ask for better than that.
Is he significantly more of a left tackle and a right tackle, in your opinion, Jeff? Cam?
I think he could probably do both. But, you know, last year, since he was a rookie, they wanted to really minimize the amount that he had to learn. They basically said, learn left tackle and left tackle only. And they feel comfortable, obviously, with Guy Wimper. And so I think they're going to. I think in the future, whether you're Guy Wimper or whether you're Cameron Bradfield, to have that positional flexibility to where you can play left or right side is a must to me. Mm-hmm. Because then you can become – because typically on game day, 7 active offensive linemen and that's it for the most part.
Right.
You know, which gives you 1 backup tackle, 1 backup interior offensive lineman. And so somebody's got to be able to play whether, for example, on game day, if something happened to Brad Meester – maybe Uche would have to slip in to center, and somebody would slip in at guard. You know, if one tackle got hurt, you know, that guy has to play right, or he may have to play left. You know, I mean, that's game day is typically 7 offensive linemen, and that's it.
You know, I was reading one of the national summertime fill space pieces, and it called the Jaguars' offensive line makeshift.
How can you call an offensive line makeshift when you had the league's leading rusher from a year ago and a rookie quarterback at the helm? To me, that should make an offensive line pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, yes, they gave up a lot of sacks, but you had a rookie at the helm. I don't know how they can discount having the league's leading rusher. You know, I know his nickname is Superman.
Right.
And that's Maurice. But he's not Superman.
He can do it all by
himself. He's got to have some help. And to me, that's that just goes to show you the laziness and ineptness of some of the people that write on a national level. They don't bother to do the homework and to really take the closer looks.
All right. You have a thought on the line?
Well, I think obviously they believe a huge theme for the offensive line this year in camp and beyond, they believe that they've been miscast as an all run blocking and a bad pass blocking offensive line. That's sort of, you know, that's going to be a big theme they're going to hit on all year. And it's, you know, it's frankly up for them to prove it. I mean, they believe they're good, and they believe that with some cohesiveness and some experience together, that they're going to get better as a pass blocking group. And, you know, that'll be their charge to do that.
You know what the best part about that is, right? The national writers writing that? Motivation.
Sure. Goes up on the board.
Absolutely.
All right, folks, one more break, and we'll pass it back to Joe Fortunato.
Thank you, BS. Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more. Get better. More of Jaguars This Week brought to you by Aetna right here on Jaguars Radio.
All right, let's talk contract, shall we? Couple guys with issues. Not you, Joe. Your deal's done.
Well, I have issues.
Yeah, but you have forever, so that's nothing news worthy. Justin Blackmon and Brian Anger do not have their deals done yet. And Maurice Jones-Drew deal is still hanging out there, obviously. He's got a deal, but whether he's going to report or not.
And you got Josh Scobie.
I forgot about Scobie.
July 16th.
Which is coming up Monday.
So there's a lot of things to kind of watch, you know, here coming up. And then, you know, so you got two veterans, Josh Scobie, Maurice Jones-Drew, even though he has a contract. And then the two rookies, the punter and the wide receiver. You know, it's that this is going to be very interesting to watch because I don't think that Brian Anger's contract is going to draw out very, very much. I think that's going to be a slam dunk.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter when they start on it.
My understanding is that'll get done in a day or two before training.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of getting people back in the building, getting it done. I mean, it's you're not going to have a third-round punter holdout.
But the Justin Blackmon contract may be interesting. When you get a DUI after the draft and prior to negotiating your contract, common sense, folks. I mean, if you're the team, what are you going to want to have? You're going to want to have some type of protection built in there that, you know, typically a first-round pick and a top-10 pick doesn't have any of this, quote-unquote, offset language where the team can be able to recoup some money. And I would have to think that the Jaguars would want less money in signing bonus, more money in paragraph 5 salary, and some type of language in there that would protect the team. And I get it. I mean, hey, if you're Justin Blackmon, that's the mistake that you made, and these are the consequences that you're going to have to deal with. But here's the issue. You're dealing with an agent. And when you're dealing with an agent, if that agent, and I don't know who his agent is, but that agent does not ever want to do a deal that another competing agent could take to a prospect in following years and say, if you're going to sign with that guy, look at this terrible deal that he got Justin Blackmon in 2012. And look at how out of line in the language that it has and that nobody else around him has in their contract. And obviously there's an explanation for that. But it doesn't matter to that agent.
True.
Right.
He's going to lose future clients. So that's where the catch is going to be. Common sense would tell you that, hey, that's part of it. Justin's going to have to live with it. But the agent is going to make it very difficult. That's going to be an issue.
You know, the CBA regulates just how much they can communicate with the players during this time. But it's about football. I mean, if you're Gene Smith, don't you have someone calling Justin Blackmon on a regular basis? What are you doing? Who are you doing it with? I mean, the questions may be different, but you get my point. Checking in, following up, making sure.
Yeah.
You got a lot invested in this guy already, you know, non-monetarily speaking.
There's probably a limit to exactly how much of that can be done. I mean,
and what
is realistic? I'm sure calls are getting made, but there's a limit to how much.
Well, sure, he can tell you. Yeah, I'm doing this, and I'm with my mom and dad. So I get that. It's just, well, you send these guys away for, you know, a long weekend, and trouble finds it. Now you send them away for a month, and
that's the world we live in.
Yeah, I don't. To me, that you know that contract with Justin Blackmon and the Maurice Jones-Drew, you know, situation. Those are the two main storylines prior to the report date of July 26. What's going to happen with them? Josh Gobe, that'll get taken care of. Brian Anger, that'll get taken care of.
I'd be surprised if Maurice is in when camp starts. I'd be surprised if it lasts more than a week. But he'll be out.
Yeah, but, I mean, how is it going to go? I mean, is it going to be...
He's going to come back and play for his contract.
Okay, that's my question.
That's my guess.
That's, to me, is what the interesting part is going to be. What will happen?
Because I don't think this team's going to change its stance.
And how far would Maurice be willing to push it? You know, I got that question asked to me in the last couple of days, and I said, look, I don't know. You know, I have no idea what's going to happen. You know, and they were like, what do you think the team is going to, you know, change his deal? And I said, I don't know the answer to that question either. You know, I don't know.
Well, I had somebody tell me that they thought.
You had to guess. You think it plays out the way I just said, but you just don't know.
Well, I had somebody that I respect tell me that they thought that the real problem was that in order to make him happy, you were going to have to give him big, big money. It wasn't like you could just go back and massage the deal, but that, you know, he looks at the Peterson deal and looks at the Chris Johnson deal and says, well, you know, why should I take significantly less money? I'm as good as they are. And so you couldn't make him happy with something that to you or I would think would be reasonable.
Right. And a lot of fans have who write into me say, can't you just give him some incentives? Can't you just make the next 2 years a little more appealing? I would think as a player, Jeff, you're looking for years, right? I mean, it's not just incentives over 2 years. Well, you're looking for years.
From a player standpoint, you always look for, number one, guaranteed money.
Right.
And the only way to get guaranteed money on a two-year contract that's already in existence is by adding years.
Right. And these people are talking, you know, incentives. Why can't they do incentives? And incentives isn't guaranteed money.
No.
So that's not what players are usually looking for when they're looking to extend and renegotiate. Incentives aren't the answer in that scenario.
That's going to be a very interesting situation to watch. And unfortunately, that will probably be the main storyline about this football team nationally.
Until it's not. Right.
You know, that's the unfortunate thing. It
won't
be about football.
Well, locally, too, it'll be the big story. I mean,
sure.
It can't help it be. You've got the guy that everybody believes is the star, best player, core player of the franchise. Until he's here, he's the story. Unfortunately.
How long will it take him to get up to speed with the new offense?
That's why I go back to what I said last week. I wish that, you know, the leverage starts July 26 when you don't show up.
Right.
And how much leverage do you really have? It would have been nice if he'd been here for that veteran orientation camp and the mandatory mini camp and had those things under his belt, learned the offense, and then that way, if there was a holdout or he wasn't here for the start of camp, he could have came back and hit the ground, no problem.
Jeff, thanks. John, appreciate it. Joe, as always.
WOKV AM Jacksonville, WOKV FM Ponte Vedra Beach.